your tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step,
step by day,
day by day, I'm on the round to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Roy. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or that might will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? And so let's start the meditation. Please join me in the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, it's right here on the sign, or there's cards in the back of the seats. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There's a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Robert to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
Spiritual Experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening
are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unexpected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves.
I'll just finish it. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer, Alcoholics, page 567-568. You're welcome. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane/meeting mode or just turn them off. Tonight we have Tom. I think this is the eighth week. I was out of town last week, so I missed it. But I've heard the first 6 weeks leading up, and every time it's been uncut, it's been raw. He has a great message, and hopefully God will speak to him tonight. Tom, if everybody help me welcome Tom.
How's everybody doing tonight? My name's Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. How many people, is this the first time that you've been to this tonight? I know you, Paul. Not too many. Most of the people have been here pretty steady. That's good, and I won't have to repeat myself too much. I've been accused of that. I have a man in my home group, he said to me one time, he goes, "You know, Tom, I love you, but you just keep saying the same stuff over and over and over again." I said, "Well, what do you want me to do? Lie? Come up with a new story?" I haven't got a new story. You know, it's the same story. And I just keep repeating it. This big book, you know, this big book is, you see in this big book, this is a second edition big book. And it says to Jim, your friend always texts, Robert L. Stryker. Tex Stryker was, he's long dead. Never saw me get this. He's the guy that I talk about that said to me in the 101 Club, he said, Tom, I'm your sponsor. And I used to say to myself, well, that's nice, you know. He's a nice old guy. I'll let him think that. I'll do him a favor, you know. And he was the first guy who ever took me to Delray Beach. I had never been to Delray Beach. It's in 1976. I'd been around AA since 1973. And he said, I'm going to Delray Beach. He said, do you want to come with me? And I said, sure. You know, and I'd never been in Delray Beach before. So he took me up to the Central House. He was going to speak there on a Saturday at the Central House. And that was the very first Central House. How many people have ever been in Central House? Quite a few people. Yeah. Central House is a big place where hundreds of people go in Delray Beach. And in those days, the Central House group was maybe about 40, 50 people. And it was in a little storefront across from where Anthony's restaurant is now. Anthony's restaurant on the north part of Federal Highway was Howard Johnson's in those days. And they had a few meetings a week. Now they have a few meetings a day. And we went there, and Tex told his story. And he said, we're going to go do some 12-step work. And I said, okay. You know, and we went over. And the second Central House is the American Legion. It's been there since after the First World War. It looks like the Alamo. The building still exists, and it was the second Central House for years. And on the north side of the Central House in those days was a little house, a little three-bedroom house. And that used to be South Palm Beach County Mental Health, that little house was. And in that little house, they had three gurneys with restraints. And alcoholics that came in there to detox, they didn't get drugs. They got restraints while they went through the DTs. And we sat down, and Tex started to read the big book to this guy who was in full delirium tremens. I mean, he was talking out of his head about bugs crawling all over him and everything. And I sat there, you know, listening to Tex read the big book to this guy and thinking to myself, this Tex is a fool. He's an idiot. You know, this guy doesn't even know what the heck's going on. He's out of his mind. And when we got outside, you know, I could hardly wait to get outside so I could slam Tex. You know, and I get outside with him, and I said, what good did that do? I said, that guy didn't even know we were here. And Tex looked me in the eye, and he said, we're not here for that guy. And I said, who are we here for? He said, we're here for you. I'm always been the kind of guy that needed right-sizing. Because like I've been talking about, I'm an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. We talked about my defects of character. But I had three main defects of character. I learned from my inventory. Self-condemnation, I condemned myself my whole life. False pride to make up for it. And I copped the resentment over it all. So I've always gotten my own way. You know, and thank God for the men in Alcoholics Anonymous who didn't mind getting in my way. Because if it weren't for them, I wouldn't be here. Page 82. The alcoholic is like a tornado, roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel, pay attention to this, we feel it is unthinking that he says that sobriety is enough. Unthinking that he should think that sobriety is enough. You know, when I talk about being around Alcoholics Anonymous for years and not being in it, that's what I mean. I thought sobriety was enough. That's enough. Because I come here and I looked up there, you know, at those steps, and I see where I got a problem with alcohol. And so I say to myself, well, yeah, I got a problem with alcohol. So if I don't drink any alcohol, I don't have any problem. Case closed. That's what we mean in the big book on page 82 when it says we feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. Just not drinking is just a little bit of what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. Because, I mean, let's face it, you know, like I shared in previous meetings, you know, several months went by, you know, when I finally did, after 10 years of this going in and out of AA and never being able to put any time together, and the progression of my alcoholism taking me to a place where I no longer could stop, and me having to go to the VA hospital and be put on ANA abuse, and I come out of there, and the guy steps in my way when I go to walk in the second central house, Dennis O, and says, where are you going? And I says, I'm going to meeting. And he says, well, you don't want to get sober. And I says, well, I am sober. He says, oh, no, he says, you just haven't had a drink for a couple months. I says, well, that's sober. I says, you don't want to do what it takes to get sober. I said, well, what do you want me to do? And I had this big resentment towards God. And he said, well, all I want you to do is what I've been trying to tell you for years to do. And I didn't even know he'd been trying to tell me anything for years to do. I didn't even know who the hell he was and what the hell he was talking about. I was just mad because he was in my way. Standing in the doorway. Who in the hell did he think he was? And I said, well, what's that? What do you want me to do? All I want you to do is get on your knees and ask God for the strength to stay clean and sober. And I said, well, I don't see how that's going to do anything. And he said, how's your way been working, wise guy? How's your way been working for you? Has your way been working for you? And what are you going to say? What are you going to say if you got a track record of being around AA for 10 years? Never getting it. Never doing it. It doing nothing but get worse. It do nothing but take you to the place where you no longer can stop anymore. No matter how much trouble you're in. No matter people trying to kill you. No matter you're going down for hard time. No matter that you've been in and out of the stockade for years, in and out of jails for years, no matter that you've been a tornado running through the lives of people for years. I can remember Tex telling me, I told him, I said, you know, Tex, I know what my problem is. I'm lonely. I need a girlfriend. I didn't need the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't need prayers. I didn't need a philosophy for life. I needed a girlfriend.
And Tex looked at me, I said, because you see, I'm lonely. I know what my problem is. I need a girlfriend. I'm lonely. And Tex looked at me and he said, well, you know what? He said, it's okay to be lonely. Because when you're lonely, somebody misses you. And you miss somebody. But it's not okay to be alone. Because when you're alone, nobody misses you. And you don't miss nobody. And I knew what he was talking about. Because that's who I really was. That pierced through me. Just like through the fog, the heavy, dense fog in my brain. It pierced through me right to my heart because I knew that was the truth. Nobody missed me. And I don't miss nobody because my only love was drugs and alcohol. That's the only thing I really loved. And I didn't give a damn who I hurt. I was a tornado that just roared through people's lives. And I really thought that all I had to do was just not drink. And that was the answer. And because that was my answer, I didn't need any of the rest. And it took the pain of my alcoholism for me to finally get. I have a sponsee. He was just like me. I always tend to get these guys who are just like me. I don't know why that is. And he used to say, I was stuck on the hyphen. And that's where I was. I was stuck on the hyphen. The first step is a two-parter. The last step series I did, a guy came up to me. He says, you know, Tom, I notice how you keep going back to the first step all the time. And I do. I do because, you see, this is a life of constant surrender. That's what this is. I have to constantly surrender to the fact that I have alcoholism. Alcoholism, a disease that centers in my mind. A mind-powered disease. A talking disease that talks to me and tells me I know how to run my life. I know how to run my life, and I know how to run your life. And I know the way life ought to run. And if everything would just be my way, I'd be happy. The world would be a wonderful place. I'm the guy that believes that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness from this life if I just manage well. That's all I have to do. And that means controlling, manipulating, rationalizing and justifying. Because I'm a master of rationalization and justification. To soothe my conscience, to minimize my guilt, to give me the ability to do whatever I think I need to do because I need to be happy. If that means stepping on your toes, it doesn't matter. And I had to learn the hard way, you know. I never have changed out of virtue. I've only changed out of pain. The pain of my alcoholism got me sober. And the pain of my assholism taught me I needed to change my character. I didn't want that Alcoholics Anonymous to be about changing my character. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He's like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" That's what I said. Every time I stopped drinking, the wind stopped blowing. No trouble here. Everything's fine. How are you, Tom? I'm fine. I'm just fine. Don't ask me again. Mind your own business. I'm doing fine. Worry about yourself. Yes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it. We're talking about the family because who is it that I hurt the most? The people who love me. Those are the ones I hurt the most. I can remember, I was always out there someplace, in the woods, out on the streets, out in the weeds, and I was hitching up on Interstate 10 in Louisiana, and I come up this ramp, and there's this other long-haired. I got real long hair, beard, you know. I've been bumming around, and there's this other guy sitting there, you know, look like me. And turns out, you know, he has some weed, and I got a bottle of Mad Dog, and we became fast friends. And I said, where are you going? He says, I'm just bumming around. I said, let's go to Key West. I said, man, they party down there. He said, that sounds like a good idea. I said, besides, we can stop in Pompano. My mother lives there. She'll put us up. And so we found our way to my ma's. I'll never forget, as long as I lived, I knocked on the door, and my mother opened the door, and she looked right in my face, and she said, can I help you? I said, it's me. Oh, my God. What'd you do to yourself? And who's this bum? That's my buddy. Can't you put us up? One night, that's it. Then you gotta go. I hadn't seen my father in I don't know how long. And I'm sitting in a courtroom in Peoria, Illinois. And I'm waiting to be sentenced to the penitentiary. And as I'm sitting there waiting for the judge to call me up, my father, who I haven't seen in a few years, he comes through the door from Florida. I don't know how he even knows. Probably my brother told him. He comes through the door with a lawyer, and they go up and talk to the attorney, or to the judge, him and the attorney do, and then they go and sit back down. And the judge calls me up, and he goes, well, you got two choices. You can go to the Illinois penitentiary, or you can go to Florida with your father. But if you go with him, don't ever come back here again. I said, well, I guess I'm going to Florida. You know, there's only two places I've never been thrown out of. I've never been thrown out of jail. I've only been thrown in it. And I've never been thrown out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been asked to leave a few times. They said, you can come back tomorrow. And it'd help if you'd stop drinking, you know. That's a good place to start. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it. Being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Now this is one of my favorite lines in the big book. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And we have to live it is in italics. And like I've mentioned before, or your sponsor should have told you this, that if it's in italics in the big book, that means you're supposed to pay special attention to it. That's why it's in italics, because it should be paid special attention to. And so our job is to become a maximum service to God and to our fellow man. And I didn't know much about being a service to my fellow man. You know, I knew all about being a service to me. That's what I knew about. As I shared before, the first time that I read the top of page 62, the first time I read the big book and it said selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of all our troubles, I took the book and threw it across the room. I said, that's a bunch of crap. That's not my problem. See, my problem wasn't never me. My problem was you. You're my problem. The world and all the people in it. Everybody that got in my way was my problem. I'm the grouch, in case you haven't guessed it. Always was aggressive, angry, obnoxious, arrogant, loud, like I've talked about in these past several weeks. That's the guy I was. You know, and just like the sixth step, when I come to the eighth step, I says to my sponsor, I go, ah, and I look at it and I say, this is easy. There's nothing to this. I'm entirely ready, you know, to have God remove my defects of character. I'm humbly asking him to remove my shortcomings. And I'm more than willing, you know, to make this list and make amends to everybody. I'm willing to do that, to make this list of all the people that I've wronged. And my sponsor said, well, he said, that's not the list I want you to make. And I said, well, what list do you want me to make? He said, well, I want you to make a list of all the people that have wronged you. And I said, well, that's not what the step says. And he said, who's the sponsor? And I said, you are. He said, then you'll do it my way. I didn't know why he wanted me to do that. But he wanted me to pray just like he always wanted me to do. And I sat down, you know, I got on my knees and I prayed. I asked God to open my mind. And I started to write. And I came up with all these people who owed me amends. I really hadn't thought about it, you know. I mean, I thought that we'd handled this stuff, you know. We'd done this big four-step, big fifth step. You know, I thought we'd handled this stuff. And I was amazed at where all these people came from that owed amends to me. All these people that had wronged me. They hadn't done me right. And I went to him, you know, and I said, man, oh, I guess you're right, you know. There's a lot of people who owe amends to me. And he said, well, Tom, he said, you know what you're going to have to do? And I said, what's that? And he said, you're going to have to forgive all those people. Because after all, how are you supposed to ask for forgiveness when you won't even forgive yourself? Because that's what you're going to need to do. How are you going to make amends to people? How are you going to look for that forgiveness? God's forgiven you. Who are you not to forgive yourself or to forgive others? Father John Doe, he has a way of saying things. Listen, Father John Doe on page 57. made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Made a list. A list of the people we had harmed. Why a list? So that seeing these injustices, black on white, they may be the more emphatically impressed on our minds and memories. It is to replace a list that we have carried around in our imagination for years. It is to replace a list which we have carried around in our imagination for years of the people who, so we thought, were harming us. We had resentfully gone along imagining that if we could only change circumstances, we could change. Isn't that me? Isn't that my personality? Isn't that the way that I think? That if I could just change things? Don't you remember when I came to believe and I shared with you about how I came to believe? That because I started to get on my knees and ask God for the strength to stay clean and sober on a daily basis, even though I didn't believe what Dennis said to me, he's the man who put my hand in God's hand. When I asked him, I don't see how that's going to do any good. And he said, how's your way been working, wise guy? I had to tell him my way hadn't been working. Then he said the best thing anybody in AA's ever said to me. He said, then I guess what you believe in doesn't work then, does it? Right-sized again. And he was right. What I believed in hadn't been working for me. And he said, well, then you know what? You don't have to believe. That's not what this is about. You know, that's what I was about. What I was about, you know, is I want you, you know, look, I'm not doing nothing unless I agree with it, okay? Well, this is the bottom line here. This is the bottom line with an alcoholic like me. I'm not doing anything unless I agree with it. So convince me first. Is that what you think I'm doing up here? That my job is to convince you that this program works? You know when you'll be convinced this program works? The same way I was when you start doing it. That's when you'll become convinced. Because the magic word here is action. Action is the key. Or like this old man Ed saunters up to me at 35 years. You know, I was a newcomer. And I, you know, Ed was like a guru to me, you know. And he got next to me and he whispered in my ear. He said, Tommy, you want to know what the secret of AA is? And I said, yeah. I figured he was going to lay it on me. He said, the secret is, there is no secret. That's the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous. That there is no secret. Dennis said, you don't have to believe. This is not about what you're going to believe. This is about what are you willing to do. This is about willingness. We come right back to the basics of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. The being right-sized to the place of humility to say that I don't know. I don't know. But I'm willing to do the work. I'm willing to take the action. I'm willing to make the list that you want me to make. I'm willing to take instruction without questioning, because what's the bottom line? My way hasn't been doing me any good. So what have I got to lose? What have I got to lose by trying something the AA way. I don't have nothing to lose. Nothing but what we talked about last week, suffering. When I asked you at the beginning of the seven-step meeting last week, who in here enjoys suffering? You enjoy suffering? Well, the pain is optional. The pain is optional. You don't have to keep suffering. You can practice virtue. You can practice humility. We talked about humility. What's humility? Humility ain't nothing but the truth. Humility's the truth. The truth about me. That's all humility is. It's the truth about me. No, my problem is, though, I'm three people. I'm the person I want you to think I am. I'm the person that I think I am. And then I'm the person that I really am. That's the problem. And this alcoholism is a delusional way of thinking that talks to me and tells me there's all kinds of other reasons, all kinds of other problems. You know, if circumstances would just change. Well, I mean, what happened to me is the obsession to drink and to use was removed. From me doing what I didn't believe in. It was removed. And I came to believe that my God did want to love me. That he does love me. That he loves me unconditionally and infinitely. That it was me who went away from him. He didn't go away from me. He took that obsession for me to drink and to use away. And I made a decision to turn my life, my will, under his care. He can do with me as he pleases. All I have to do is take the action and leave the outcome to him. I'm in the action business, and God's in the outcome business. I'm not in the outcome business anymore. I sold the outcome business to God. He's the boss. I work for him. He's the principal. We're his agents. This is simple. This way of life is not complicated. No, I'm complicated. No, I want to complicate the hell out of it so I don't have to do it. Because it's just too damn simple. It can't be that simple. It can't be that easy. But I'm here to tell you, it is that easy. It's just that easy. When we get out of our own way, because that's what's standing in my way. What's standing in my way is me, not you. You know, I'm a great believer in that spiritual axiom. Anytime that I'm disturbed, the problem is me. Anytime I'm disturbed, the problem is me, not you. It's me. I'm the one with the problem, ain't I? You ain't got the problem. I got the resentment. I hate you. You're churning my guts up. I'm thinking about how I can murder you like I talked about you with my partner. Plotting how I can get him out in the glades and put a bullet in him. He's home at night sleeping like a baby. He didn't have the problem, did he? No, I did. The problem was me. And when was the problem relieved? The problem was relieved when I let go. When I let go and I let God have it. And so I go to this meeting, the same old Ed McGargy, you know, the day after I come to believe. You know, well, I was in the process of coming to believe. It was on prayer, and this guy, he says, you know, prayer doesn't change things. Prayer changes people. People change things. Bing, bing, bing. The light went off. Damn. What an idiot I've been my whole life. All my life, I've been wanting God to change things for me. And he ain't been doing it. He ain't been doing things my way. That's why I resent God so much. But God has changed me. He has taken the obsession for me to drink and to use away. And I am the one who is changing things around here because I'm taking the action. I'm the one going to the meetings. I'm the one getting on my knees. I'm the one writing the four step. I'm the one doing the work. I'm changing these things. And God has given me the strength to do that. My God gives me strength. And that's all I ask for. That's all I was instructed to ask God for. I don't need to tell God what to do. God knows what to do already. He's God, and I'm not. You know? Why do I think I need to tell God the way things ought to be? Because I'm selfish and self-centered. Because I can't stop, like I said, I don't know who you think about all day, but I know who I think about. I think about me. I wake up in the morning thinking about me, and I go to bed at night thinking about me. And the only time I think about you is how it relates to me. Sure, my sponsee will get up there to get a medallion. And you know the first thing that will go through my mind? Damn, I wonder if he's going to say something nice about me. What a friggin' egomaniac. I have to say to myself, God, you're a jerk. Still. Because why is that still? 33 years, why is that still? I'll tell you why. Because I still got alcoholism. I don't have alcoholism. I have alcoholism. It's never a wasm. It's always an ism. And I wake up every day with untreated alcoholism. I have to treat my alcoholism. Me and Tex used to go to the Fort Lauderdale men's meeting. Tex used to take me over there on Oakland Park back in the 70s. We used to walk, when we walk in one night, there's a guy who's popular in that group. And he's sitting outside and he's holding his little soiree with his sponsees, you know. And the meeting starts. And we go inside and we sit in the meeting. And they're still out there. And Tex leans to me and he says, you see so-and-so? I said, well, what about? He's going to get drunk. I said, what are you talking about? The guy's got 27 years. He can't get drunk. Tex said, let me tell you something. In AA, we got no big shots and we got no little shots. One shot and we're all shot. And he got drunk with 27 years. And he ain't the first one I seen. That's why it's about a day at a time. It's not about the 33 years. It's about the day that I'm in. You know, he used to say, yesterday's booze ain't getting me drunk today, and yesterday's sobriety ain't keeping me sober today. You better ask yourself, what are you going to do today to stay sober? Because today's the only day that I can do anything about it. I got to ask myself every day, what am I going to do today to stay sober? That's why people come to me and they go, how can you be so enthusiastic about Alcoholics Anonymous after 33 years? Because it ain't about 33 years. It's about the day I'm in. I'm new every day. Every day I'm a newcomer. Fresh. Start the day off fresh with Alcoholics Anonymous. Get on my knees first thing. Ask God for the strength to stay clean and sober. Take my life and my will under his care to do with me as he would. Thy will be done in my life and through my life. Thy will be done. If people would only change, we could change. That if we could change others, we would be all right. As one person remarked, if you would only make my wife change, I'd be okay. Nonsense. We can't often change others, but we can change. We can fit in. And in making an honest list in this step, We are amazed to find that it wasn't others who were harming us, but that we had been harming others. Made a list of all persons we had harmed. Honesty again. We leave no one from this list, whether friend or foe, whether we like them or not, whether superior or inferior. We make a list of all persons we had harmed. We make no excuses in the odd case where we had also been harmed. We don't say, well, maybe I did harm him. But after all, look what he did to me. No buts, no self-exoneration, no retaliation. All the persons we had harmed. Difficult? Sure. But only unbending egotism makes it impossible by me getting in my own way. Remember this about the philosophy of Alcoholics Anonymous and living this way of life. This is a life of ego puncturing, of being right-sized, of humbling myself. Why do I need to do all these things? Because it's the way of strength, not the way of weakness, but the way of strength. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. I got a friend, 30 years sober. He still goes to a meeting every day. 30 years. Goes because he loves it. Just like I go. I go almost every day. He says, every morning when I wake up, there's two paths I can take. I can take the spiritual path, or I can take the psychopath. Now, that's keeping it simple. Okay? That's the choice I got. I can take the spiritual path, or I can take the psychopath. Which path do I feel like taking today? Well, it's a lot easier to take the spiritual path. I'm going to tell you, you find that that's the easier, softer way, is by taking the steps and putting them into application in my life. The steps are meant to be applied. One of the problems I came about with the 8-step was, just like the 4th step, I'm thinking about the 5th step. So just like that, when I'm doing the 8th step, I'm thinking about the 9th step. And so right away, it's funny how my alcoholic mind is always working to change things. It's just like the sponsee I was talking about how every time I give him instruction or tell him about something, he's always saying, yeah, but you don't understand. Yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but. Everything I say, he's got a reason. Because he doesn't want to take simple direction. He wants to do things his way. Then I have to remind him, how's your way been working for you, wise guy? Why you call me and ask me? Well, you just want to call me to have a shoulder to cry on? Because I'll be honest with you, I'm not the kind of guy that sponsors you for you to cry on my shoulder. I don't have time for that. So I'm right away, I'm trying to come up with these people that they don't, how can I put them on a list? I said, well, what about, you know, all the nameless, faceless people? I don't know who their names are. Because I'm a street person. You know, I hurt lots of people. I don't know who the hell they are. He said, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. This isn't about the 9th step. This is about making a list. It's not about the amends. We're not to the amends yet. This is the list. Write them all down, whether you know their names or not. All the bartenders, all the cops, all the waitresses, you know, all the cab drivers, anybody that you can recollect. that you brought harm to. Because I brought a harm to a lot of people. Not just those that loved me, but everybody that encountered me. You know, I was really a bad guy with cops, you know. I didn't like cops. I like to fight with cops. You know, one of my favorite things is I'd pull the fire alarm on the street and wait for the cops to get there. Yeah. And they'd jump out and say, did you see who pulled that fire alarm? And I'd say, yeah, it's me. And then spit in their face and say, what are you going to do about it? Yeah. That's how nuts I was. That's how nuts alcoholism made me. You know? I didn't want to take my own life, but I wanted you to take it. I wanted you to kill me. I didn't care when I got here. I didn't care if I killed you. I tried to kill a lot of people. I'm lucky I never killed anybody. But I'd do things to people. I don't know who they were. Some guy in a bar that I thought looked funny at me. I'd bust a bottle over his head and then run like hell down the alley. Leave him laying in a pool of blood. Those are the kinds of things I did. So all of them had to go on the list, he told me. Everybody. The persons we had harmed, our injustices will be classified under three headings: material wrongs, moral wrongs, and spiritual wrongs. Having come to a knowledge of God's love for us and the necessity of our love for Him, we now learn that His will is that we also love our neighbors as ourselves. In this step, we have made a list of all the times that we have failed to love our neighbor, and we endeavored to find out our true relationship with him. For years, we had gone on with the false attitude that our neighbor existed for our benefit, that we were the one to whom all owed homage. Now we learn that we have obligations to our neighbor, that all of these obligations are based on the primary law of all human relationships, which tells us that we must love our neighbor as ourselves. We talk about brotherly love in Alcoholics Anonymous. We learn that by doing these steps, what we're really doing is learning how to love one another. I wasn't capable of loving another human being. I was so selfish and self-centered and so hooked on just me all the time. We're going to start getting into the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th step. We're really going to start to talk about how I come to love to the practice of the philosophy of Alcoholics Anonymous. My old mentor Dennis used to say, what's Alcoholics Anonymous all about? Alcoholics Anonymous is all about people. And what are people all about? People are all about God. And what's God all about? God's all about love. I love all of you. Thank you for letting me share.
Let's thank Tom one more time. I've asked John to come up and do the secretary's report.
Hi, my name is John, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. Hey guys. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. While that's happening, I've asked Chris to come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured? That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. Page 23. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thanks, Chris. 1940-style big book sponsorship from Ford to second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Could I get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? And then anyone in need of a sponsor, please raise your hand. All right. Is that a hand? Oh, I'm sorry. Can you stand up? If you guys could stand up. Girls. So, girls, let's get with these. Girls, we're going to take you through the book and get you back to God. Thank you. You can sit. Thank you. So I wanted to acknowledge real briefly one of our home group members, Robert. He actually, first off, he celebrated 2 years yesterday, so we'll give him a hand for that. And on top of that, Robert is going to back to Europe, Amsterdam, I believe, on Sunday. So he'll be leaving, and he'll be bringing our big book style sponsorship to Amsterdam. So we just wanted to kind of have Robert stand up, acknowledge him real quick, and we you'll always have a home in Fort Lauderdale. Okay, where was I? Please join us Monday nights. We have our Big Book Study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30. Big Book Study starts at 7:15. That's on the third floor upstairs here, Mondays. We have large print Big Books and Big Book dictionaries for sale in the back. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15. We ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
We have tonight's session and all past speakers' podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study, and those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. One quick announcement before we leave. There's no smoking allowed by the front doors. You need to stay 75 feet away from the front doors. You can go down to the side here. We have smoking areas, or just please pick up your cigarette butts. Don't flick them on the ground, okay? Other than that, let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, is the glory, glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you.
Yeah. Ooh, heart is heavy, my shoulders thirsty, body's aching. Desperately in need of restoration.
addiction. Yeah. And I am ready for you to take me higher, yeah. The only thing that I can do is keep on praying. 'Cause on my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Load is heavy, too much accumulation. Possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. And I am willing to hand over every one of them. 'Cause they won't profit me anything in the end. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Never again will I wander without you, lonely new wilderness.
Crying. from the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope we'll smile.
Something, someone said.